Let me welcome our guest, Shaul Weissman, as the first segment of the program. Shaul is the co-founder and CMO of Jifidy.com. Jifidy is a startup that Shaul will tell you about in a moment. Shaul, welcome. Great to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Shaul, let's start by having you tell our audience what Jifidy is, what you do, what is the business.
Sure. What we do is we focus on gifting as a very specific subset of e-commerce. And what we do is we pretty much just work with retailers and brands to really unlock the $400 billion gifting market annually in the U.S. that many times many of them are missing out on, mainly because the experience for gifting and self-shopping are very, very different. And vast majority of e-commerce sites and retailers are designed and optimized for shopping for yourself and not sending gifts or receiving gifts. And because of that, they lose a lot of sales. So what we've done is we've created a number of dedicated experiences for shoppers for when they want to send gifts and allow them to do that very easily, seamlessly, in a much quicker way, but allow that way the retailers and brands to capture those sales that they usually lose out on when people are shopping for gifts, but yet the experience, it can be very difficult and complex when they want to send gifts.
But this is not where you started. Talk to us about where you started and how you managed to pivot to where you are currently.
Very true. So what we did is we started in around 2012. The original thought was really we were still in the gifting space. We were always in the gifting space, but there the thought was really a direct consumer application, which allowed shoppers basically in physical stores, in shopping malls, to basically pick up items when they're shopping, scan them, put them on their own personalized wish list, and share them with their friends and family, and allow their friends and family to purchase those items for them, and let them basically receive those gifts, walk out with them even from the store if they're still in the store. That was the original model, the original product, but quickly came to realize that, number one, it really wasn't working, but number two, the solution that we created, even on the back end, was solving a much larger problem on the retailer's end, and when we started realizing that, we made that switch to the B2B space where we started licensing the technology out for the retailers, and that's really where we saw our growth happen.
And what is your business model now, after the pivot?
So our business model we have two business models. Number one is we have the enterprise solutions for larger retailers who use the system and it's white labeled. And we also have a business model where we make a commission for any gift that is sold through our system. And I'll give a pretty simple example of how that works. The number one difficulty or barrier that people have when sending a gift, as an example, is knowing the recipient's shipping address, right? So when it comes to gifting as opposed to self-shopping, when you're shopping for yourself and you see an item, you know the fact, A, that you want that item and you know your size, your color, and your shipping address. It's very, very easy. So it's very easy to breathe through the checkout process. When it comes to gifting, it's the only type of transaction in e-commerce that involves two different people. So if I'm purchasing that same exact item as a gift, but now I have to start knowing, making decisions for someone else, like what their size is, or basically even what their shipping address is, it can be very difficult to complete that. So our dedicated experience, for instance, the checkout allows gift purchasers to check out for the item, but not have to know a shipping address, for instance. They just put in the recipient's email, which today, what we know for most of our friends and family, put in an email or a cell phone number, the recipient receives that designed email, they unwrap the gift online, and simply put in their own shipping address, and only then the order is processed through the retailer who ships it. So when we can facilitate that sale, we take a commission on that gift because we are creating that sale that usually the sender would have fallen off at the point of the checkout when they had to know someone else's shipping address.
I see. Okay. And Let's talk a little bit about your financing. You had the unusual fortune or misfortune, call it whatever, of having seed funding without much validation of your original concept, which as you described, didn't really work. So how did you navigate the pivot with your investors?
Right, so yeah, so what we did was exactly like you mentioned, we were fortunate that to be able to raise a large seed round. We did a pre-seed, which really were able to get us to a working prototype, but our seed round, which was around $3.8 million in funding, was done before we went to the market. It was probably something you see pretty rare, but on the other hand, you know, we had the strategic partners that we were looking at, mainly one of the largest shopping malls in the United States, who was interested in implementing the platform. And that enabled us to really develop the platform and go to market. But the problem was very quickly in that first holiday season when we started getting feedback and realizing that the user acquisition was very difficult and that the main feedback from users were they loved the experience, but for instance, didn't want to ask for gifts, they wanted to send gifts. We very quickly realized that we were onto something else, but fortunately we still had the money in the bank and we had incredible both investors and board members that really supported us in you know, really realizing, and I think that's something also in their credit to say that they realized that we were able to put our finger on the issue. We didn't kind of continue running kind of blindly trying to do something that wasn't working. And it was a natural progression, really. And you know, as much as it was a pivot, internally we saw it as a kind of like a natural step of what we developed and how we can offer our solution. Mm-hmm. And we started getting feedback from retailers that we were solving a bigger problem for them when it comes to their experiences on their websites. We were able to really modify the technology and the experience for them. And you know, our supporters and our board really realized that and were very supportive of that, and it definitely paid off.
So if I double click down a little bit on that situation, you said you raised 3.8 million seed, and somewhere in the middle of that you switched gears. How much of that $3.8 million did you burn through to arrive at the conclusion that the retailers were really the market that you needed to go after?
Not a big chunk of it. Mainly because we planned it well and we went to market and you know, there were definitely some things where we could have done better in terms of MVP. You know, we developed the product. So on one hand, we developed something from end to end that didn't end up working. But on the other hand, we didn't go too crazy. You know, we could have probably done better in terms of the minimal viable product, but we realized mm-hmm. pretty quickly. We definitely had.
So you didn't really blow the Series A on experiments. You were early on in that Series A. I mean, you call it seed, but 3.8 million sounds more like a Series A.
Yeah, so we can call it, anyone can call it kind of anyway, but yeah, it was a large seed and on a Series A level for sure. We didn't burn through all of it. We realized really quickly the potential and what we were doing and the different marketplaces that we were able to be in. For instance, gift registry, where we saw a huge gap in the market on retailers level where either it was too complex for them to develop or maintain, so we were able to use the technology for that. And at the same time, we also realized another big difference when it came to gifting was that it was very hard even for the retailers to find the customers exactly at the point of when they want to send a gift. And what we really wanted to do was identify those points on an online journey where someone has a reason to send a gift and bring that gift transaction to them. And that was a big jump for us, for instance, when we created a partnership with Evite.com, who is the mm-hmm. largest digital invitation platform online, and mm-hmm. we implemented our technology there. So basically, any of the retailers that we work with, which is basically over 150 national retailers, we enable mm-hmm. the gift checkout to happen directly inside a digital invitation. So instead of having to bring someone to, for instance, Toys R Us or Barnes & Noble or Amazon, the second they got an invitation for an event where we know is the most natural spot for someone for a reason to send a gift, we were enabled them to purchase a gift directly inside that invitation. And I think that was a key factor that we were able to realize also on the gifting mm-hmm. online journey that we consider. And that's also where we saw a big jump in terms of our activity and also growth and ability to raise another round.
And so let me just point out a few things, folks. Those of you who are listening, the reason I'm probing all this with Shaul is for you to understand that if you go through a round, a $3.8 million round, without sufficient proof points, it would be impossible to raise another round. But what Shaul is describing is that very early on in that $3.8 million round, they managed to go ahead and do the pivot and find the product market fit with the retailers. And that is vital. So you absolutely have to get to product market fit as soon as possible if you have any hope of raising additional substantial rounds of financing. So, Shaul, back to you.
Yeah.
What was the average deal size of the retailer deals? You described two different business models. You described the enterprise software licensing business model, and then you had a commission business model where the only the email is available and the address, the shipping address, is not available. I imagine mm-hmm. that in that time frame, in the Series A time frame or seed time frame, you were doing the first business model mostly, yes?
Correct, yes. So we were doing mainly that first model. And so that there it's really kind of based on the transactions, and we were able to really, like I mentioned, get to those touch points where people have a reason to send a gift. That's where you can see the volume, and we make that commission from those gift purchases. And on the second hand, and that's mainly in our solution for gift registry, that is more the enterprise level where, obviously the deals, the deals themselves are larger because it's an enterprise solution, but obviously it's got the other side to it where the sales cycle and so on. A good example for that is our first client for them was actually IKEA, who launched our gift registry, tested it in a single store, in their test store in Portland, Oregon. And after testing it and really piloting it, actually this is just recent news, a couple weeks ago, they rolled out nationwide to all their U.S. stores using our gift registry technology. So on one hand, the enterprise level is definitely in something that's reoccurring revenue for a startup, which is very important, and it has the SaaS fees. But on the other hand, it's something that you really have to be able to sit back and, on one hand, be able to support the sales cycle, both on a time and patience level, but also on a financial level. So that, for that important, that raising money can be very important for that as well.
So in the next time that you went out to raise funding, what were the metrics that you went out with? How many of these retailers did you have in the in your bag? What kind of revenues were you generating? What kind of average deal size were you presenting to the investors?
So at the time, we raised our what we considered a seed round in 2012. In 2015, mm-hmm. we raised our next round, which we called the seed round, which was $3.3 million. And mm-hmm. that we considered really kind of like a growth round where we can use to basically continue to develop our the products and the proof of concepts. That was actually led by a strategic investor who's the owner of actually Evite. When they saw the success mm-hmm. Of Evite, they realized the potential in what we were doing, both for their other brands and other brands there. So we were definitely we saw it more of a success on a, I think on the proof of concept level that it's actually working. And that money was really used to scale. So by us, the KPIs are always going to be on the that level, which is the volume that we can create, the gifts. Evite has been doing very well. Since then, we've created a partnership with American Greetings, who is the largest greeting card company. So today, if you go to their website and send a electronic greeting card, you can actually attach a gift to it through our technology. So just another good example of realizing another point of online where someone has a reason to send a gift. And once we've proven that concept with Evite, we were able to raise that money and basically duplicate that, A, for other platforms, and B, for other retailers that would want to use our platforms as well.
So the EY deal was already done by the time you, not the investment deal, but the partnership deal was already done by the time you raised the 2015 $3.3 million round?
Yes, that was really right at the beginning there, and then we started seeing the success. And that's something I think that we've really done well at taking advantage of, and I think many entrepreneurs can really learn from. You know, when you're coming to raise a round, there's a few kind of things that can really give you that backing for being able to raise the round, right? So it could be incredible traction where you have incredible amount of users, and it could be either volume in terms of eyeballs or in terms of revenue. But on the other hand, you can also have that strategic partnerships in place where you're proving a concept and you're proving it that it works, and that's something that you can duplicate. And I think at every level of our stage, we were able to, first of all, be able to create those, show the value that we provide, use that to create partnerships, strategic partnerships, and use those strategic partnerships to show the potential and raise money through that. And that's back to one of your points that you mentioned. You know, we're very big believers in failing quickly. You know, we try things, we see what works, and entrepreneurs should definitely not be scared of failing very quickly, because the quicker you fail, the quicker you're able to realize that there are other opportunities and use your resources to do what's right. And we've seen that. We've seen that in other platforms of ours. Either on points online where we put a transaction and seen it hasn't worked, or platforms in general. And, you know, really the goal is to focus on what is working and pour the gasoline on those fires as opposed to trying to light other fires.
Well, I think there are two other observations I have based on your, you know, experience, the story that you're telling. One is that, you know, investors, especially those of you who are trying to raise angel or venture capital money, are trying to grow businesses incredibly fast. They're looking for hyper-fast growth. So they're going looking to go from 0 to 100 million in 5 to 6 years, 7 years maybe maximum. Now, for that, these kinds of partnerships, strategic partnerships, are very good indicators and very good opportunities for acceleration opportunities, right? So how are you going to, if you're going to have to do, you know, one, if you have to acquire every customer individually, and it's a long sales cycle, long enterprise software sales cycle, that's a, that those kinds of businesses don't grow that fast, right? So if you can show accelerators, like in your case, the EY deal, the American Greetings deal, these are acceleration points, and those would typically signal to investors that, yes, this company is going to grow at the kind of pace that we would want to. The other observation I have...
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
No,
you want to add to
you're
that?
Absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
The other observation I have, Shaul, is that you have used strategic partnerships very effectively, and including as equity partners, right? So bringing EY on as an equity partner also does something specific to a company. The strategic partners don't have the same hyper-growth goals. They have good growth goals. They're ambitious about growth. They want to, you know, grow a business and all of that, but they don't necessarily have the same level of growth goals as the VCs and the angels have. So angels want to grow fast because they want to, you know, attract VC money and you know, hand that over to the VCs as follow-on financing partners. But strategic partners have other reasons why they're doing this. They are doing it because you have strategic value to their business, and their growth goals are somewhat more manageable than this hyper-growth requirements of VCs and angels. And I find that something worth pointing out, because, you know, hyper-growth is not a natural state. Very, very few businesses grow from 0 to 100 million in 5, 6, 7 years. So if your success bar is so high, very often companies go out of business because of such absurd growth requirements of their financial partners. So I think, you know, the lesson that I would like you to kind of pay attention to in Shaul's story, folks, those of you who are listening, is that if you can bring in strategic partners, it does a lot of things. It gives you acceleration points, but if you can bring them in as equity partners, it also puts a little bit of a brake on the expectations your investors have from you. Charles, would you like to add to that?
For sure. So, yes, you're absolutely right. And, of course, you have to also mention that there are some risks in involving equity and partners or, for instance, what you would consider a client. Bringing a client in as an equity holder can sometimes be tricky in terms of conflict of interest. They might want to do something. You want to do something else working with other people that are competitors of theirs.
Yeah.
In our in our specific case, for instance, the actual investor was the Liberty Media, who owns Evite and many other companies, and they actually have a venture arm that they invested through. So yeah, so there's a lot of value and benefits for having that strategic partnership. You sometimes have to really be able to really make sure that you're working with the right people and your goals are aligned. But number two, you're also absolutely right in terms of the expectations, and you also have to remember that sometimes you have to make sure, you know, there's nothing wrong with the expectations of what VCs and accelerated growth. Many times you don't want to get stuck in a nice point where you're happy where you are. Growth and growing quickly is something that's very that's important, and you sometimes really need that that push to that direction. So there's definitely a balance between the two, and many times it's it also has to do with the space that you're in. You know, us being in the retail space, we've always felt that the strategic partnerships had more of a benefit than the VCs because being able to go through that long process and know exactly what the minds of the retail is and where it's going and where it's shifting to brought a lot of value to us. So on both hands, you're exactly right in terms of the value, but a lot of times you have to make sure that your goals are aligned and it really works out well in terms of that partnership.
And I think the last point that we should highlight, you already said that, let me underscore that, is that just understanding of the business, right? In this case, retailers understand the business, and people who have awareness of the gifting process understand the business that you're in a lot better than random people. And this is something, by the way, let me point you to another episode of this one-on-one and strategy roundtable, where the guest was Daniel Kane, and his company is Modernizing Medicine, and he raised 100% of his equity from doctors because his audience was doctors, and you know, they were both his customers as well as his equity shareholders. And he raised round after round from his customers. And part of what he said was valuable there was just as people were very knowledgeable and understood the value proposition immediately. And secondly, once they became customers, they became very vocal customers. So they told everybody and their mother that, this is a product that I really like. We're using this product. Please buy the product. So as a result, they became great, you know, reference accounts. And because they had ownership in the company, they were motivated and incentivized to do that kind of, you know, active advocacy.
So, and a big part of that is market validation.
Yeah, exactly. Part of it is market validation. Absolutely.